The devastating earthquake that occurred on the 8th of October in the South Asian Kashmir area, held contentiously by both Pakistan and India, left at least 80,000 dead. Some estimates range into the hundred thousands. More than 100,000 were injured, and countless millions made homeless. As tragic as the earthquake was, the suffering is not over. Immediate-term funding has been scarce, and many in the highest elevations beyond the reach of damaged roads have yet to receive relief. Winter has begun in the Himalaya, and they are now facing freezing temperatures and deep snowfall with little more than the clothes on their backs. President General Pervez Musharraf, whose army took control of the government in 1999, called a recent conference of international donor countries and organizations in the modern political capital of Islamabad, located at the foothills of the affected areas. Though it generated some $5.9 billion in pledges, about 80% of that amount came in the form of loans. Without a coordinated, funded, immediate plan from the authorities to shelter the hundreds of thousands of inadequately housed people in the higher elevation villages and emergency tent camps, officials at field hospitals and tent cities are preparing for a potentially huge second wave of suffering in the coming weeks, as families, especially the young and old, succumb to the plummeting temperatures. Dr. Mohammed Wasim Khan is the president of the local branch of the Pakistan Red Crescent Society in Rawalpindi, twin city to Islamabad.
By the time these pledges will be done, let me show you that many of them will die. And anyone dying now will be our joint responsibility. We'll all share as a global village, the entire world community will now be responsible for any death taking from now onwards. Because it was our responsibility. It was our duty that we should have realized what is coming up. We have failed to do that.
Most international NGOs have focused their efforts on hospitals and shelters in the valleys and cities. The high elevation areas have mostly been the province of limited helicopter supply lines and rescue operations by local and foreign military. Most international and local NGOs do not have the backing or logistic ability to reach the far-flung villagers, although for a few areas, slowly improving road access has opened a brief window before winter closes it again. In the higher elevation reaches of the mountains, some people have chosen to remain, despite their lack of shelter. Their situation is complex. Many cannot leave the remaining livestock or farms, which will be their only livelihood after the winter. They resist the idea of slaughtering their animals and descending to an uncertain future in the congested tent cities in the valleys. They also fear that leaving their homestead will void their ability to collect various monetary compensation promised by Musharraf for villagers that have been injured, lost their houses, or lost family members. Many of those who have reached the relief camps have escaped such devastation that the idea of returning seems impossible. Most say that they would like to return, but they have lost everything and cannot do so without some kind of assistance from the government. Shahida, living with her family in tent 160 of the sprawling H-11 camp in Islamabad, is from the Balga area, a particularly hard-hit region.
It looks like our lands have been blown up. There were a lot of landslides. The houses have moved from their places. We can't say anything about the situation so far because there are cracks in the road. When the rain comes, the water will pool in the cracks. Then we will see if we can move back or not.
Many survivors in the relief camps feel that the international response was impressive, though not overwhelming, and they are thankful for the help. Mahmoud, from the destroyed village of Chinari in the Muzaffarabad area, buried many relatives in the first days after the earthquake, including his mother-in-law, who died while they were waiting for help.
I think that American and British have worked a lot over here. Their twin-bladed helicopters have also worked a lot. Their machines moving the big things from one place to another place. Whatever they have done so far, we are really thankful to them. Whatever they have done for humanitarian reasons, nothing else. We are really very thankful to them.
NGO workers are hopeful that the recent donors conference will inspire increased coordination between the government efforts and the NGO sector, especially in light of the belief that the government has not articulated a clear plan to shelter the vulnerable mountain populations. Saad Yusuf works for the Sungi Development Foundation, a well-known Pakistani NGO, which was one of the few groups having a strong presence in the affected areas before the earthquake. Sungi represented the NGO sector of society at the recent donors conference.
If we have a ground-level presence, I think it's helpful for the donors to come to us and say, okay, this is our plan, you implement it. And if we have ground-level presence, the government could also say that, okay, you just activate your people within the ground level and we're going to support you in these sort of activities.
As the earthquake fades from the international spotlight and the remaining journalists wait patiently for an opportunity to photograph victims of the coming snows, it remains doubtful that the current relief system can handle the challenge of winter. This is Casey Connor in Rawalpindi, Pakistan.